Hi, this is Danielle from the Jealous Curator, and this is episode 51 of Art for Your Ear. As always, it's supported by the lovely people at Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Okay, so I titled this episode, Chance Favors Those in Motion, for two reasons. One, that's the favorite quote of my guest, Zoe Pollock, and two, it could not be more appropriate for her because I'm pretty sure she's constantly in motion. She is talented, motivated, smart, a mom, hilarious, and generally unstoppable. I'm going to ask her how she does everything she does. Ready? Calling Montreal. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm so excited that we get to catch up.
Me too. I'm very excited.
And not only catch up, but actually ask you about stuff. Because usually, you know, we just chat about whatever, but it's like, I don't know your whole backstory. I don't know how you've become the queen of self-promotion. I don't know it all. So I want to ask you all that stuff.
Sounds great.
Okay, so first things first, you're in Montreal, not Vancouver anymore.
I am. Yeah, we moved to Montreal about a year and a half ago. And it's been so great. I mean, there's so much space here. And that was one of the motivations for coming here is space, you know, access to great spaces in both our home and the studio.
Yeah. And so did you get a studio?
I did, yeah.
Outside of your home or in your home?
No, outside of the home. We have a 1,300 square foot studio overlooking the city and the mountain, and it's really, really beautiful.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. So does that mean you're not coming back to Vancouver anytime soon?
Well, it means I'll be here for definitely a couple more years, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, good for you. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Yay. Because wasn't it supposed to be 1 year?
Yes. 4 years. 4 years is the new 1 year.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's what all the trend blogs are saying too. Totally.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard to go anywhere for 1 year. 1 year is like 5 minutes, you know, you can't.
You're not even settled.
No.
You're not even settled. No. Well, that is great. And I was wondering, because your studio in Vancouver was so cool. And I was so curious how long you'd last in Montreal without a studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was about 1 month.
I knew it. Couldn't control yourself. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to hear all the beginning stuff, because we just have brunch and we don't talk about the beginning stuff. So, I just want to go back and like hear what you were like as a kid, and did you go to art school? Where did you go? All that stuff.
Yeah. So, I guess as a child, I grew up in a suburb of Vancouver, and as a child, I was, as most children are, is I believe really creative, and we were allowed to roam as we wanted. We had a great neighborhood, and we were free to do as we pleased and encouraged in every interest that we had. So I had a great upbringing that way. And that continued into my high school years when I was a pretty good athlete. I was actually pitching fast pitch at a pretty high level. And I broke my leg around 14 years old. And
playing ball?
Playing soccer. But yeah.
Oh.
So it was a big break. And what followed was a little bit of hard times. You know, it was already hard enough being a teenager, and I went through some depression and actually, decided that I needed a bit of a change. And so I asked my parents if I could go live in South America for 6 months with my uncle, who had just moved down there. And my dad said if I saved enough money for the flight that I could go. And so that summer I babysat three kids and saved the money for the flight. And so I really recently have identified that as like my first entrepreneurial exercise in being like, okay, I want this thing. How can I achieve it? And my dad sort of set out those parameters. And then I got to go to South America and live in Chile for 6 months at an all-girls private Catholic school in Spanish, which was super fun and obviously a very formative experience.
Wow. Yeah, we did not cover any of this at brunch.
No. Yeah,
so were you were 14, 15 then?
14, yeah, I was 14. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
my
young. God. Like looking back, it's young. But
yeah. How old is your daughter?
Yeah, she just turned 10. So
okay.
It's. I mean, but she could run a small country. I mean, I don't. I have complete total trust in her. But me, I don't know. I'm not so sure.
Oh my gosh! And so when you came back, And
And
when did all the art stuff kick in?
Yeah, so that's what happened was exactly when I came back, I didn't want to go to regular high school, so I asked my parents if I could apply to a fine arts high school, which was about half an hour drive away. So it was quite the undertaking for them in terms of driving, but grade 10, 11, and 12, I went to Langley Fine Arts just outside of Vancouver and had an amazing experience. We had our own gallery. We got to put on our own shows. You could be a part of the choir. There was a real focus on the arts, and that really formed the direction I was to take, you know, going into university. And they helped with portfolio preparation. So I applied to quite a few schools in the US and in Canada, and then decided upon Concordia. And so I spent my first 2 years in studio arts at Concordia in drawing and painting, and then decided I could transfer. And so I wanted to be by the ocean and have a different experience. So I went to Halifax to NASCAD for the last 2 years of my university education.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whew.
Great experience.
Yeah, no kidding. I really, well, and so Concordia, you've gone home now a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. It's been 10 years since I lived here, and very different, obviously, in a different neighborhood and having two children and my own professional practice, but definitely a city that I love, and I speak French, and so it does feel very comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. And NASCAD is so great. I think I actually even applied to do my MFA there. And didn't get in. I think they take like 8 people a year or something like that. But I lived in Nova Scotia when I was really little. And so I have like a place in my heart, you know, and mixed with the fact that it's an amazing school. So did you overlap with Ben Skinner there or no?
No, he's a few years my senior, I do believe.
That was very politically correct. If Ben's listening to that, I'm sure he will appreciate that. okay, and so what happened after NASCAD?
After NASCAD, I met my now husband in Halifax working at a pub, and we decided to drive across Canada, and we didn't even get so far as Ottawa, and we found out we were pregnant with our daughter, who, like I said, is now 10. So we had a bit of a turn in the direction we sort of the way we thought things were going to go. And so we just carried on and continued to drive across the country and ended up, you know, obviously back in my hometown close to my parents and had our kids there. And then moved into Vancouver when both of our kids were about 2 and 4 so that we could have the experience of being, you know, young people in an urban environment to advance our careers. So that was really an exciting time for us, too.
Yeah. And what I love so much, I remember you telling me this, that when the kids were little, didn't your husband stay home with them so you could continue with your work?
Definitely. Yeah. There was a point where our second was coming along and I was 27 and I was just starting to make some money. And when we looked at it, he was working over 100 hours a week running a restaurant. And he wanted to leave anyways. And so when we looked at it as a time to experiment with his leaving and my painting, our living costs were so low that we decided it was a really good time for us. And so he was able to claim, you know, whatever little paternity they give you. But he took that on fully and had two kids at home. And I painted in the studio that was out back of our house. It was an old carport. So yeah, I painted out there and that's how I started. Yeah.
Wow, that's such a cool story. I love that. Like, what a great guy. And, you know, just to give you the support, and you were right at the beginning of something great because then it completely blossomed.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing when I see that now that I'm a bit older, like partners swapping out and doing that, making sure that so-and-so can go to nursing school and then swapping out and the other person works. And it's just such a respectful way to be in partnership. And I think it can happen in any career. And it's just such a cool and innovative way to be a young family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, that I was just going to say partners, really cool. Like that's the whole point, right? Like if, it's being partners and trading off and letting people go and do their thing. Like I couldn't have done, I was just saying to Greg this morning, had I not married him, I don't think I'd have the Jealous Curator. I don't like none of it because he was the one that was like, you should do that. You should do that. And you know, even went as far as to actually set up the blog. Cause I didn't even, you know, I'm not techie at all. And same with the podcast, you know, and anytime an opportunity comes up, it's like, oh, I got invited to LA to this thing. Do you think I should go? I'm not even finished saying it. And he's booking the flight.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just so great to have a partner like that, that, you know, says, yes, go and do your thing. And
Definitely.
So How did you, like, you are, I mean, obviously you saved up for South America, but you are so good at self-promotion and looking for entrepreneurial avenues. And do you think that's just your personality, or like, do you ever have a sense of fear about it, or do you just go?
Well, there's lots of questions in there. So the first thing I think is, yeah, definitely it's part of my personality. It's like my innate nature is to figure out, like, to creatively problem solve myself out of a situation or into a different situation is definitely like natural for me. And I think actually a lot of creative people are really good at that. I talk a lot when I'm speaking at universities about how powerful it is to be a creative thinker in this day and age, and how you can imagine that something could be possible and then figure out the steps to get there. That's just such an incredible way of thinking that not everybody has. So I definitely, that's my first nature. And then it's nurture too. It's the situation that we were in, right? It was like, I had a fire lit under me for having my kids so young, right? And so a lot of people, if you don't have that reason or that raison d'être, you know, then sometimes you're not as inspired to work so hard, you know?
Right.
Or you quite literally, you know, there was times where we just had to stay alive. Like I had to sell a drawing in order to pay my rent or whatever it was, right? So, you know, you have that, that work ethic that's, you know, both natural and circumstantial.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've just had so many opportunities, I mean, really cool thing. We'll get into in a little bit, but like when opportunities arise, like you just strike me as a person that does not have an inner critic. do you ever have like that, oh my God, what am I doing making rugs? Or are you just like, yeah, let's do it?
Yeah, I'm definitely, I don't have a lot. I mean, a lot of that is hidden. Like it's in the studio practice, as you know, and you've touched on and written about and talked a lot about with other people, which I think is amazing to unearth that and bring it up as a topic. A lot of that, self-doubt, if you want to call it that, is happens in the studio practice, but I'm like in natural flow with that. I've completely accepted that that's part of the career that I've taken on, you know, like being an athlete and having to train hard. I mean, it's just part of what we accept as our calling, as part of our calling, right? So mm-hmm. for me, that's what allows us to, you know, I've had enough breakthroughs to be like, oh, that was worth it.
So, right, right.
You know, when it proves itself to, as you know, when it proves itself to be fruitful or exciting or prosperous, then, you know, it's well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I was just talking, I just did this workshop, this high school workshop, and I was saying to them, you know, there's days, like I was talking about you guys, like the creative professionals, I said, you know, they don't just step into their studio and have like an endless supply mm-hmm. of creative flow. Like there's days when nothing's coming. There's days when stuff ends up in the garbage can instead of on the gallery wall. But the difference between, you know, an amateur and a professional is the next day they go in and they make again and they make again and they make again. And that's sort of how you get through the self-doubt. Like you said, you hit enough breakthroughs to know that you mm-hmm. are going to hit another breakthrough.
Absolutely. And I think it's helpful sometimes to think about different careers. Like you listen to a complete album by your favorite singer and you think that that entire thing was just fully inspired. No, that was days of writing and struggling and just showing up, et cetera. Right. And mm-hmm. same with any career, right? It's not just all inspiration. And I think there's like this real, critical, like this hyper criticism on ourselves when we're artists, because it's supposed to be this like higher call. I mean, that TED talk by Elizabeth Gilbert really yeah. helped me with that kind mm-hmm. of unlock that elusive creative genius. I love that. She's just show up and work, and that kind of philosophy. I've always sort of been more attracted to that than the idea that it's just going to come upon you. It's just unrealistic, you know?
Yeah. And it's so much pressure. It's so much pressure. And
exactly.
I used to always put that pressure on myself that, you know, every time I went in the studio, a masterpiece was supposed to come out. And it's like, that's crazy, literally.
No. Yeah.
So your work, I have loved your work mm-hmm. for so, so long. And your landscapes are stunning. Your figurative work is so dreamy and beautiful too. And do you have a favorite?
No, I'm really fortunate that I love doing both of them, and they both because a lot of the commissioned work is you know, it is truly commissioned by patrons or clients or whatever. It is sort of being asked of me to do that type of work, and so it's maybe less emotional in the sense that I don't have to draw that up from inside of myself, you know. And then when I get to balance that with work that is really narrative, really touches on something that I really need to express, then I get to do both of those things. And that I think if I was doing one or the other, I would just burn out in either way. So they're very different bodies of work to me, and they mean different stuff to me. And one, they're just so different. So I love that about both of them.
Do you have several on the go at one time? Or do you?
Yeah. We're like in the studio, I'm producing between 4 to 8 paintings a month. And usually, yeah, just half of one and half of another. But it ebbs and flows as well. When I have to push towards, like last year, I had to push towards doing my last solo show in Vancouver was called A Break in Pace, and I really had to push that work. And you have to fit that around, you know, the commission work, which is what brings you money. So that was a real push last year. It was a real struggle in the spring of last year, yeah.
And so you were doing that from Montreal?
Mm-hmm, yeah, and shipped it all. We shipped it, and it, you know, you have to give it drying time and stuff like that. So I think it was about 14 new pieces, and you're doing that in and around, you know, the other money work, right? So you don't know if those are going to sell. And, you know, by the grace of God, a lot of them did, but that's after. You have to still, like, you know, be spending the money on the canvases and the shipping, as you know, and that's all a risk, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you paint in oil? Speaking of drying times.
I do.
Yeah.
So I underpaint in acrylic, and then I, so that's fast to get that idea down. And then I let them sit around for a couple of days, and I look at them and let them totally dry. And then I put oil over tops. But yeah, every surface is 100% oil once the product is finished or whatever.
I saw your, underpainting on Instagram the other day of that.
Yeah.
I was like, stop. I love, like, that's my color palette right there. And I was like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah.
I love your finished work too. But I was like, I'll take it right now. I'll save you the whole oil process.
Yeah, I'm working on not overworking the work. And so we're definitely experimenting. It's interesting, especially with this body of work. We're really experimenting with that. And so, yeah, it's been good.
Do you share your studio with someone, or are you there by yourself?
No, I have I have a studio manager who works full time in the studio with me. So every day I'm with Ariane, and that's why I say we. I mean, she helps me with all of the logistics of the business, but also advises in terms of color and direction and, you know, bodies of work, and helps me manage my time in terms of where we're headed. And then I have a girl who comes in part time, and then a salesperson who's here part time as well, Olivier. So we have sometimes we're four, and sometimes it's just Ariane and I.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Are you really? I would have never guessed that.
Oh, yeah.
My husband, Greg, does all the producing on the podcast, and he goes, I'm going to have a separate channel for Zoe's laugh so I can turn down the volume on it.
too happy for the internet.
Yeah. and so, how did you, is it Ariane, did you say?
Yes,
how did you meet her? Like, how did that partnership come about?
Yeah, it's been the biggest blessing of the last year. It's been the biggest transformation in terms of how the studio is operating and systemizing everything, et cetera. But she called and she was freelance writing at the time for an online magazine and called to interview me. And she was really on the ball and had her questions prepared and was really knowledgeable and kind and efficient. And then I called her back like 5 minutes later and was like, you don't happen to be a 22-year-old who wants to work for me full time, do you? She was like, actually, I am. And I do. And I was like, okay, perfect. So I quote unquote interviewed her on Monday. I fake interviewed her. And yeah, she's been a perfect fit ever since and gets more perfect every day. So it's been really great.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. A few people I've talked to that have, I just interviewed Lola Donahue last week in Ireland, and she, same thing. She's got her friend Tomasa has become her right-hand man, and she handles all of that stuff so that Lola can make art. Because so much of it was becoming really shipping, and so much of it was logistics, and so much of it was paperwork. Yeah. And she was like, I was trying to paint and do all of that, and it's just impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually is. And it's insane. Like if you thought about it in any other career, you would never do it. It's not a good model for growth, you know. It's a really stupid to do everything yourself. So I mean, the second, you know, you can put I mean, I should have done it way sooner, but you know, I experimented with it a bit in Vancouver, but it's I just always felt like there was never enough money to go around to take that leap, but it's more than it more than pays for itself, you know. So
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because you've said a few times, and you know, this is partly why I wanted to talk to you, is that you keep comparing it to other careers. And it's true, I think so many people don't think of their art practice as a true career. And so if they do go it, they go it alone because it's this creative journey and whatever. But it's but it can be a business, and you need to surround, you know, like you would, if you were doing anything else, you would set up an infrastructure. So why wouldn't you set up an infrastructure in this situation? And I love that you have.
Yeah, but it took me a long time. It took me like 8 years because I think it's just because you never think there's enough money to go around or, but yeah, you just, I mean, in any other business, when I looked at my girl, started to look at my girlfriends, they all were replicating themselves. But even this morning, Ariane and I were joking because I went to the art supply store and it opens at 10. Well, Rona opens at 8 because real workers are going to get their supplies and then going to work and starting work at 8:30 or 9, right? So the art supply, I get in at 10:30. She's like, "Where were you?" I'm like, "The art supply store doesn't even open till 10." So it was a funny, you know, reflection of how seriously does anybody take this? It's obviously just a hobby, so you can go in at 10 a.m. It's like, no, my day starts at 8. Like,
Oh my gosh, that's
right?
hilarious. I love that.
The
Oh
house
yeah.
painter's already off, like working and getting paid. Like he's working, right? It's funny.
He's probably on his first coffee break by 10.
Absolutely. Have
Yeah,
lunch, right? God.
exactly. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just so proud. I mean, it sounds condescending. I'm just so impressed to watch you, you know? And every time I see anything online, I'm just like, oh man, there she goes again. So, for example, so you've been doing commission work for a long, long time. And
Yes.
actually, I want to talk about that quickly because I know that you work with quite a few interior designers. So that, did you approach them, or did somebody first approach you, or how did that come about?
Yeah, I've always approached them. That's how I started my career. When I started, it was very early days in the internet, and I'll just touch on that because I think it's an important fact. There was nowhere to find anything online. There was no Uprise, there was no Buy Some Damn Art, nobody had anything like this. And so designers specifically and clients had no idea how to find anything online, right? Now we've got that Tappan Collective or Tappan Collective down in LA and various online art resources. So I was really offering a service to interior designers that was very different from what they were able to find in galleries or online. And so my business was started on that. And that said, that has changed a lot, as we all know, in the last few years. But I still continue to reach out to interior designers and let them know that I can create for them what it is that they need for their clients, obviously within the realm of my own, you know, style, et cetera. But that I am able to achieve that for them and in a timely manner and, you know, include shipping, et cetera, and kind of take care of all of those pieces because they're extremely busy and their clients are really busy people too. And so by simply, you know, jumping up to that level of customer service for them, it's been an awesome way to make a business and make a living.
So smart.
Well,
You are. You're just so clever.
I don't know. It
And then
was
how
necessary.
did the and so did the rugs, your beautiful rugs, did that come from working with the designers?
No, well, in a roundabout way. So one place I wanted to show up where I didn't see any artists showing up was at IDS West, which about 5 or 6 years, oh, about 6 or 7 years ago now, I started showing up at IDS West and renting a booth and presenting, you know, my work to designers as an option for them and for their clients. And through that, there was a designer that I worked with, Tanya, and she introduced me to the Burritt Brothers. And from the second we met, I had what they needed and they had what I needed. And we were just like on fire in terms of what we could create together. And we share the same values in terms of customer service, but also they let me have complete creative control over the first two rug lines, and it's just been such a blessing to work with them. We're so aligned. It's fabulous.
That's so cool. So the first time you saw one of your paintings transformed into a huge area rug, was that so weird?
Yeah, it was really weird. It was There's a few things. One, I've never made paintings that were 8 feet by 10 feet. So when we hung them on the wall and there was five of them, there was a body of work that was hand woven. You know, they're just absolutely gorgeous. They're around $10,000 each. They take, you know, between 2 to 3, 4 months for these people to make them. So in 1 square inch, you're seeing 100 hand knotted knots. The sheer power and like beauty of these things is just gorgeous. And it was the first show when they set up my rug launch of the Over Oceans line in Vancouver. Was my first show where I had not set up my own show. So I went and like got my hair done or something and bought some shoes and walked into my own show that was set up. So that was like a surreal experience in and of itself. And then to see the majesty of these like magical huge things, Keith just kept asking me like, are you okay? Do you like them? And I had only seen them unrolled like the day before, but on the floor, and it was a very different experience. And it was surreal. You know, it was, I'm the kind of person, if I love a sandwich, I get so excited and I don't stop talking about it. You know, I'm just like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. I can't believe it. But I was just like, was, you know, speechless because, and Keith just kept asking like, do you like them? And I was like, yes, I do. I'm just quite literally had my breath taken away. They're really beautiful. So yeah, it was a very moving moment, probably the most touching moment of my career, definitely.
Yeah, because it's so cool because you didn't, like you say, like you didn't make them with your hands. And then normally when you hang a show, you're probably in there with your hair tied up in jeans hanging your show.
Yeah,
exactly. And then yeah, to walk in and see all of this other craft by other people put into your image. Like they're just so, so beautiful.
Yeah, it's very, very moving. It's very touching. And just that anybody like the Burritts and those people, you know, the people weaving them, that they would invest that much in you is just very, you know, it's very, very, very humbling, you know, and touching. So yeah, mm-hmm. It's a cool experience. Yeah. And it definitely like whet my appetite for design. You know, I'm like, okay, this is exciting. Really exciting when you can kind of figure out how you might like to make something and then have somebody else, you know, craft it and bring that to life is really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the cabinets, for example.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, we had a lot of fun last year. We made a lot of different new prototypes. Jeff and I did the cabinets that got some great exposure. And then we also had 3 or 4 new items at our booth that were truly prototypes in our booth at IDS West last year, and there was a table that was laser cut with one of my nudes into it, and I made a hand painted mirror. It was really, we made some really cool stuff together last year. Yeah, it was fun.
And so are you continuing with that sort of stuff as well right now?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, him and I, we had to take a break in terms of, and focus on our own, delivering our own products to our customers and refocusing on our business. Cause as you can imagine, it's very time consuming and extremely expensive to prototype stuff.
Yeah.
And, so we had to kind of pull back and refocus on our respective businesses, but definitely it's something that I want to continue to pursue because it's just, it's so magical when you bring together two people, no matter who it is with Jeff or other people that I've worked with, when people are excellent at their craft and you pair those two things, there's a synergy that happens that's, you know, this chemistry that it's very speedy to make something that's new and it's I don't know, it's like a real chemistry that happens and mm-hmm. it can happen quite, you know, it expedites the process. It's quite cool.
Yeah, and it's sort of magical in a way, like neither of you could have done it without each other, and so it's this, yeah, it's this little moment in time.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, also there's an excellence, like we were working with this guy who's a spray guy, Steve Fast, and he's so good at his job that whatever he touches is just perfect. Like, you know what I mean? And so when you work at that level with people where they're like, you're really good at what you do and I'll do my part. And when it comes together, it's beyond, you know, it's just really.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So cool. Okay. So I just want to step back because you had said about, hang on, some weird Wi-Fi situation. Okay, good. You had said about, you know, your personal work versus commission work and how, you know, it sort of touches on an emotional thing for you. So is your figurative work sort of your more personal stuff? Or are you doing figurative work for clients as well? And I just wanted to know what the emotional things are that, like, you know, which pieces are those for you?
Yeah, so the figurative work over the last 10 years has been At times more loosely and at times more directly, true narratives that are experiences that I've had. So in the recent body of work, A Break in Pace, for example, that's a whole body of work that's completely narratives about experiences that I had as someone who was married, as a mother, as a woman, and as just a human being who's experiencing pressure, pressure on time and money and et cetera. So there's a whole sort of reason, various reasons why I made that work. And it was to tell a story, you know, that you hope is both extremely personal, but also touches on universal topics that everyone in that room can connect to. So that's the drive for the figurative work. And the landscape, because it is separate from yourself, if you imagine yourself as a human looking out onto landscape, it's still honest in that sense of us looking out at something, and my clients really connect to that. But it's us gazing into something and sort of having this feeling, these feelings around emotions due to color and spatial, our relationships to space, and you know, time passing, etc. So they're both really true, but the figurative work is an honest description of experiences that I've personally had. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you do you have a sketchbook? Like, do you have sort of, do you set up that story ahead of time and you kind of have a plan going in when you're going to make a show like that, that, you know, you've got your step-by-step narrative, or do you just sort of let it flow as you go?
Yeah. I mean, I journal almost every morning. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time like praying and reflecting and stretching and writing. And so I don't do it in a really formal way where I collect those thoughts, but I have pieces that I'm thinking about. Like, I want to make a piece right now called The Tenderness Apart From Me. So sometimes the title, I know what that is going to feel like, but I don't exactly know how and when that's going to come about. Mm-hmm. So I'll hear like a title, or I'll write down some titles, but often it's started with writing actually more than a visual.
Like to capture the feeling that you want to capture, or the story that you're trying to express.
Exactly. Like, so when, for example, you know, I'll give you an example we can all relate to is, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about women achieving balance. And I think that's total and complete bullshit. And, you know, that our life cannot possibly be at all times balanced. You know, if you imagine like the scales being perfectly, that is, you know, anyways, when I was started to think about that, I meditated on that. I imagined this woman with a foot on each ship, and the ships were sailing in different directions. And she was, you know, quite literally trying to achieve this balance. There's these things I read or stuff I hear about in the media that I can't help. They don't settle with me. And so that's often a departure point for work, where I see something and I'm like, yeah, but that's not been my experience. And I'm pretty certain that that's not the experiences of all the other women that I know. So this is sort of something that I want to write about or start to make work about.
That's really cool. Do you get little images that pop into your head about how you want to?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll just hear something and then all of a sudden I can picture it. And then all I have to do is actually get into the studio and make it, because it's just already sitting in there.
Yes. And that's when it's magical. That's the best, you know, that's the best experience ever, because then you're just executing, you know, you're a vessel that's like, you know, making that on behalf of something that you're already certain about, which is just such a great gift, you know, every once in a while.
Yeah. The muse showed up that morning for work.
Yeah. Oh, thank God.
Thank God. I've been here all day. Where have you been?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it was at the art store picking stuff up. Didn't get in until a little bit later.
10:30.
Yeah, so the muse shows up at 10:30, 11. Has to get a latte first. Yeah.
Yeah. The worst employee ever.
Okay, I have speed round questions for you.
Okay, let's do it.
Go-to cocktail.
Ooh, white wine.
Ah. Sunrise or sunset?
Boring.
No, that's good.
Sunrise every day, all the time, anytime. Yeah.
Are your, that's why I kind of, this was a setup, because I wanted to ask, like, with your landscapes, are those sunrises or sunsets, or are they just experiments in color? They feel really sunrisey to me.
I'm a morning person, so I'm sure that comes out. I spend more time awake and cognizant and aware in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely they have that influence, I'm sure, but they're meant to be whatever the client sees. You know, they're not for me to just, they're not like Halifax, early morning dawn, 1982, you know, they're meant to really have people, transcend their bodies in the way that, you know, Rothko worked, that sort of transcendence of your body and just meditation on color. And I need them to be balanced, and there's things that I need as the painter, but they're definitely, this is not speed round. Oh my gosh. Carry on. Sorry.
That's okay. The speed round is like the slowest part of the whole thing. And it's because of me, because I'm like, well, let's talk about that a little bit more. I have more questions. Okay. I do not know if you're going to have an answer for this. If you weren't an artist, what would you be?
A public speaker.
Oh. Have you been doing that a lot?
A little bit, but I'm just taking a break. I can't figure out, I have something new that I want to say, so I'm just doing a lot of writing and just being very patient. I'm not plowing ahead with that at all. I'm not forcing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I feel the same way right now, because I did my creative block talk, I don't know how many times, and I feel like I have something new to say now, but exactly that. I'm not sure. I know what I know the topic, but I'm not sure how I want to say it. I just have to wait.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I feel you.
I'm taking the summer off. Are you going to be up here this summer?
Nice. We are. Yeah. I will come and visit you.
Okay, 100%. Good. That was so weird last year. Okay. So everybody that listens to this knows that I live in this tiny little town and you've got relatives up here. So you come often in the summer. And so we were going to go do brunch and you said, oh, can you just, you know, pick me up at my aunt's place on the way to the restaurant, 'cause it's on the way. And I was like, yeah, sure. Give me the address. It was the house, the backyard backed onto the backyard of the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
That was so weird. I was like, what are the chances? So I peeked over the fence and looked at my old backyard, and that was just so weird. Anyway.
All my friends with this are going to be like, classic Zoe getting other people to pick her up in their car. Classic. Yeah. Get your own car, you know?
It was on the way. It was fine.
I don't know.
Okay. Where would you like to be magically transported to right this minute if you could go anywhere?
Mexico.
Just for chilling?
I believe part of my soul is Mexican, and I love tacos.
Oh my God.
I went to school there. I did an exchange actually through NASCAD, and I did an exchange there. And I just, one of my girlfriends down there right now is pregnant, so I want to see her pregnant. So,
and eat some tacos. It's really about the tacos
down there,
right?
So I can help. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. That's why I go to LA. That's why I go to New York. It's not really anything else.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I thought you were going to, you know, I feel like part of my soul is, you know, Mexican. And also I love tacos. I think it's really about the tacos.
Part of my soul is a taco.
Yeah, there you go. Oh my God, so funny. Okay, and last question. Don't think about this one too much. Just throw it out there. Favorite art blog. Okay.
After the Jealous Curator. After the Jealous Curator, it's Nowness.
Excellent answer. Anyway, that's it. Those are all my questions. Yeah. Do you have any crazy stories?
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh.
No, I have no crazy. Oh, what? I don't. That's too hard.
I know. I'm sure you do have lots of crazy.
I have a favorite quote.
Okay.
I have a favorite quote. It's by James Austin. He says, chance favors those in motion. So that's a nice one that I like.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you are definitely in motion. I can't ever picture you sitting still.
Well, I'm learning. Getting there. I'm learning. All right.
Okay. Well, I think we're breaking up here.
Soon,
so,
my dear. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was fun. And I'll see you this
Thanks
summer.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Take care.
Okay. Bye. Oops, sorry, a bit of Wi-Fi weirdness at the end there. Maybe that was Chance telling us to stop talking and get moving. Anyway, doesn't Zoe have the best laugh? Perhaps that's what happens when your soul is made from tacos. Hilarious and so much great advice. I loved, loved, loved her story about the art store not opening until 10. Art is a job, and we should be having a coffee break with the construction guys by then. Anyway, I loved this. Thanks to Zoe for doing this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode. And thanks so much to you for listening. And yep, you guessed it. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.